You're listening to Valley of Praise on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Well, it's a good morning and welcome to the Valley of Praise right here on the Adventist World Radio, powered by the SID Media. Disasters and problems come our way in society, in families, in homes. And one question that I've always had is, as a church, do we have a crisis strategy? How do we respond to a crisis when it comes along our way? Or are we always caught off guard? And this evening, or this morning rather, to talk to us about strategies on how churches can respond to a crisis, we've got a social worker with the St. Joseph's County Police Department in America. I think it's in Indianapolis. He will correct me if I'm wrong. We have got Henry Mudari. He's been correcting me about the surname, and I am definitely trying to pronounce it the best way possible. Good morning to you, sir, and welcome.
Good morning, and thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. I think within your workspace, strategies on how to respond to crisis are part and parcel of your planning and your thought process.
That's very true. So at my position here, they call me the crisis coordinator. That's the title for my position.
Right.
So I'm a crisis coordinator within a police department. And most of what we do is coordinating crises that are mental health and addiction are related. That's what we normally handle. But that doesn't mean that we don't encounter other crises like homelessness and natural disasters and things like that. Because a lot of those things, when they hit, they actually trigger the mental health and spiritual aspect of things, where people now begin to wonder, where should we go to now that we're affected and affected in this way, right?
Yeah.
So I will be responding to you from a general aspect of crisis in itself, but I'll be more emphasizing on the spiritual and the mental aspect of things.
No, that's great. And thank you very much for that. Now, I think the question that I have is, in your line of work, do you then engage with communities to train and equip them on how to respond to any crisis?
Yes, we do. As a matter of fact, just this past week, there is an organization, Indiana Health, they called us to talk to their workers. This is a clinic, which is part of Indiana Health. They called us to talk to a part of their work force to try and tell them or teach them or equip them on how to actually handle a crisis when they see one. A part of my duties are to train, but I always say this before I train somebody. Do you have the calling for it?
Right.
Because you may train the wrong person for the wrong job. Do you have a calling for it? If you don't have a calling for it, let's not waste our resources and try and train people that are not geared toward that. So I normally say you have to identify your calling.
Yeah.
If social work, if human services is your calling, then you will do well with the training.
Yes.
So once you have realized that it is your calling, then you put your heart into it. Not just your head, but your heart. Because it's one thing to work with your head, it's another thing to work from your heart. Right?
Yeah.
Because if you're working from your heart, nothing will conquer you. You will not run from any situation. You will stand, because you will begin to understand why you are in it. If you're in it for the money, you're in it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
If you're in it for service, then you know that, okay, I'm in it for service, therefore I'm here to help. So the first thing in crisis coordination is to get the right people for the right job.
I think that's very challenging, Mudari, because How do you then identify, because in a church setting, how then do you identify that? Because we've got this tendency, we say, yeah, anyone willing to be of service in this, and all of us, because we want to appear like very good in regular and good standing, then we come through, we raise our hands.
That's where the issue of leadership comes into play. If you have leaders who are people oriented, who can identify the right people for the right positions, then half your job is already done there. A lot will come and say, yeah, I am equipped for this. I want to do this. But it's up to leadership now to vet through those who are willing. Because not everybody willing is capable. So you gotta vet through the willing to see, okay, among the willing who are capable or who can be developed. You develop those, but the bottom line is they have to be willing first. You cannot coerce people into coming into this kind of work, into this line of work. They have to be willing. So churches are in a very good position in that nobody forces anyone to do anything at church. You are called and you respond. That's what church is all about. So already the people that are in church are positioned to provide their services willingly without being coerced. So that's a good way to start. And from there, churches operate from a moral conscience perspective, right? Or who are in church will not do it because there is something in it for them. They will feel mandated. They will feel like it's a sacred duty for them to actually step in and help when help is needed. So once we realize that this is what we're working with, this is the caliber of people we are dealing with, equipping them will not be that hard.
I think I like that approach because it actually, as you rightly said, it stops us from wasting our resources. I mean, you can spend 20 hours training somebody who really doesn't have the calling for that, and you would have just wasted 20 hours on somebody, and you could have used it on somebody who was really interested in this. And sometimes, and you rightly say, it's about leadership. Sometimes people just need to be nudged and encouraged. Because some of those that have got that calling may just be shy. And maybe my question would be, why is it important to have a crisis strategy or a crisis response system within any church or any organization or any community?
To answer you in short, a crisis is something that comes without you not even knowing that it's coming, right? It's part of those emergency things that just pop up, they just show up. And everywhere we are, whether we are in the home, in the community, in institutions, wherever we are, crisis will always come. We should always expect that a crisis of some sort will come. Now, let's go to back to the church setting. There are crisis situations that are arising within churches, but we are trying to ignore them. We have issues that are already going on within churches right now, but we are trying to ignore the fact that we have addiction-related crises within our churches. We have mental health-related crises within our churches. We have violence-based crises happening right now within our churches, within marital institutions, within our church. We have all those happening, right? And we can no longer keep saying that this is something for the outside world. It's not happening in church. It is happening in church. Once we realize that it's happening in church, we won't be asking questions like, should we have a crisis team in place or crisis strategies ready for maybe when a crisis arises in a church. We already now know that we have those situations in church. So the question should be, what should we do with what we already have, what we are already facing within our churches? And I would say the first thing is to acknowledge that we have such situations. And then we have to also acknowledge that there is a stigma associated or surrounding the issue of addictions
Yes.
and men within our churches. So we need to bring down or break down the stigma itself,
Yeah.
right? Break down the stigma. Once we break down the stigma, and then we bring this thing to our churches as something that we can talk about openly. Once we start talking about these things openly, once people start feeling comfortable that the church is a good place where I can actually talk about my situation without being judged, without being condemned, without being labeled, then you realize that the church as a whole will agree that, okay, let's come up with strategies as to how to handle these situations that are befalling us.
So you're saying the first port of call is just to acknowledge that there's a crisis. And I like that because, when you think about it, there's a whole lot of things that we're trying to ignore, but they're right there in front of us. People are drinking like no man's business nowadays. And we're like, it's just once off, but I think it's a serious thing that, and I love the fact that you're saying we should acknowledge that we've got something in front of us.
Correct. Once we acknowledge that.
Now, I think you can continue. You're saying once we acknowledge that.
Once we acknowledge that, once we destigmatize and once we bring awareness to the issues that we are facing, then we can start to plan then what then should we do? That's when we start now channeling resources towards mitigating what it is that we are facing as churches, because we cannot channel resources to an issue that we are not acknowledging that it does exist, right? So once we do that, then we start un understanding what we need. Okay, so what exactly do we need as churches? We need workers who are trained in the problems we are faced. So we need mental health workers. We need addiction related workers. We need for example, we just had COVID hit us, and then so we need health workers who understand how a crisis like COVID can actually come up and what we can do to mitigate its effects on the people of God in our churches, in our homes, in our families, in our communities, right? And then kind of those resources, then we are now beginning to wonder, where are we getting these resources from? The church providing all the resources, or we now have to find resources somewhere? And then you will realize that once we open up ourselves like that, you'll realize that there's other organizations, other institutions which are not faith-based, which will actually come to us and say, you are a church. You are a faith-based institution. We have always been working with faith-based institutions whenever we face a crisis. Now that you guys are willing to partner with us in this crisis, I think we can work together.
I like that. I like that because, when you budget for something that you know, you budget for something that you know, and the moment we don't know what is it that we're budgeting for. So I guess in a sense you've began the question that I was going to ask you to say what constitutes of a crisis response kit? So number one, it's acknowledgement. Number two, it's planning. Number three, it's budgeting. Am I on the right track there?
You're on the right track. And then if you follow the sequence of what you're talking about, you get into training now, right? Yeah, then you get into training. You train the right people for the right job. Then you look for partnerships, right? Because you're not going to go it alone, because you realize that as a church, you may actually try and try and intervene in a crisis situation, and then you realize local governments are not open to you doing that. You're stepping outside of your boundaries. That's what some local governments will say. So you may want to build those partnerships with local governments now. And I know our church and some churches frown upon the idea of partnering with governments and stuff like that for causes like this. But Even Christ would say, render unto Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and stuff like that. And then the people would come to him and say, as a matter of fact, he asked a question whose inscription is on the coin, right? It was Caesar's. Then he says, okay, so we are dealing with monetary issues, and monetary issues have nothing to do with God, according to what you were saying. They have everything to do with Caesar, who was a world power. So you can do what you have to do for the world while you're doing what you do. For who? For church.
For Christ.
Because remember, these people are still in the world. We can't be of the world without being a part of the world. Right? So let's make sure we forge all the partnerships that we want, that we need to, without asking where is the money coming from?
That's quite interesting. That is quite interesting. And do you think, and I don't want us to dwell on this, but do you think sometimes we fear having a crisis management strategy because we are afraid of the resource aspect and we are afraid of failure?
In a sense, I would say yes. And then in another sense, I would say that would be unfounded. Why is it unfounded? Because in times of crisis, communities often turn to local institutions for support, for comfort, for practical assistance itself. And most of the time, you realize that local churches are being called upon to play a vital role in all those response endeavors, right? Talk of ADRA, talk of other organizations that are faith-based. These are trusted institutions with deep community ties, right? And they are uniquely positioned to provide support, resources, and pathways to healing, these churches. So we cannot say we are afraid. We are not afraid. I think it's just a case of leadership again. I go back to that. Local leadership. Leadership that doesn't know what to do, or leadership that is not willing to take upon major challenges. They just want to deal with local tiny issues that make them look like they know what they're doing. They're just afraid to go the next level because maybe their leadership strategies or lack thereof will actually be exposed. We need leadership that rise to the occasion and meet the challenges of the day as they come, not to dwell on issues of the past all the time and forget that we are living in a progressive world.
And okay, and thank you very much for that one. Let's look at the position of the church. Let's look at where the church is positioned in the community. I am of the opinion that as a church, we are positioned in a prime location. And I'm not talking about land, and I'm just talking about as a community, almost everyone has got this. Maybe I'm talking about Africa. People have got a sense of going to worship. People have got a sense that when I'm in crisis, the church is there for me. I've seen people when somebody dies, they might have the money, but they haven't been going to church for a long time. They will go to the church and say, "Can you please come and bury my relative?" And so forth. And I think this is a good opportunity if we see ourselves as being positioned in a prime location.
You are right where that is concerned. That's why if you listen to me from the beginning, I said churches have a sacred duty. We have a duty to step into the communities where we live and beyond and step up whenever there is a need. Churches have that sacred obligation, right? Not only are we positioned strategically within community, not only are we are required, we are mandated by heaven itself to actually step in. Now, remember why the deacons were chosen in the first
Oh,
place.
yes.
There was a need. Do you
The
think there were
widows.
more political powers back then? There were political powers back then, but the church leaders decided to intervene by choosing some deacons who were going to do secular jobs, like the distribution of food and whatever they were supposed to do. They were not just doing that for church people, they were doing that for the entire community. So, we as churches, we are positioned in such a way that we can transition from church into the communities that have nothing to do with it as a form of evangelizing as well. Because as long as you do something for the community, you will see that they will come over to see where these people are coming from that came in my time of need. So coming up with crisis strategies is, in a way, in a sense, evangelizing. It's a form of evangelizing, and we need to embrace it.
Amen. 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 I like that. I like that. And now, the one thing that a crisis requires is one to be proactive rather than reactive. Proactive rather than reactive. And I fear being proactive because the cart has already bolted or the horse has already bolted, and we are rather playing catch up. And I think the challenge for most of our churches is that we are rather we respond to a crisis rather than being proactive to it. And I think we need to have that mindset that says, let's be proactive.
Now, this is a sad thing you just brought up, and I'll tell you why. Especially within the Adventist community, the Adventist community, it's not often that you hear us discussing addiction-related issues. It's not often that you hear us discussing mental health-related issues. But if you turn to our founding fathers and mothers, you will realize that a major part of Ellen White's writings dwell on mental health. We have the blueprint. We're supposed to actually be the head and not the tails where this is concerned. But we have forgotten that we have a whole library, a whole education, a whole blueprint on mental health and addiction-related issues that we could tap into and actually help the communities that are suffering that don't have what we have. We are not the head, not because we're not chosen as the head, but because we chose not to use the resources that we already have.
Let's talk about the spiritual element because you touched on the spiritual element, and I want you to bring in the spirituality of what we're discussing. Why is it important for us to look at it from a spiritual point of view? And I think you've laid the groundwork by talking about the deacons when they were chosen. They were supposed to respond to the men were dying and widows were left alone, and no one was looking after the widows. Ellen White writes about these things. She writes about so many vices, and she encourages institutions to deal with these vices. Why is it important that we also have this spiritual view? Maybe we've got blinkers, maybe because it's not written in the Bible in a way that we're used to. The Bible doesn't talk about addiction. So somebody is saying, but addiction is not in the Bible. Why should we worry about these things?
We should worry about everything that affects a human being who was made in the image of God. If we are talking of human health, the wholesomeness of a particular individual's health, we are talking the physical, we are talking the emotional, we are talking the spiritual, we are talking the social, we are talking the mental. If we touch on the physical and not on the mental, we haven't touched on the human being. The human being is more than just physical. If we touch on the social without touching on the spiritual, we haven't started touching on the human being. The human being, for the totality of a human being, is all of the above. So if you prioritize the physical and neglect the emotional, you haven't done yourself service. That is why Ellen White, instead of coming and just writing about the spiritual, the spiritual, the spiritual, she was writing a lot about the emotional. She was writing a lot about the physical. She was writing a lot about the mental. She was writing a lot about everything, right? But we are cherry-picking what we want to overemphasize on. We want to overemphasize on the spiritual. But guess what? You cannot worship God wholeheartedly if you have a diseased mind, because God talks to us not through our spirits, but through our minds. That is why he says to us, come, let us reason together. He's not saying, let us have these feelings together. No. He's saying, let us reason. You reason with your mind. Your mind is your mental. That is why Eve, when she was in the Garden of Eden, when she was approached by the snake appealed to her mind.
Minds, yeah.
And there was a discussion based on mind. And that is why, also, at the end of it all, you hear God saying, be transformed by the renewing of your mind.
Mind. Yeah.
It's
In the
all about
mind.
mind. And then you know the verse, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are just, at the end of it, what does it say? If
Think
there be
upon
any goodness, virtue, and whatever, think on these
this
things. What? Think.
think.
So God is actually trying to tell us, I'm also about the mental, not just the physical. For us to have a spiritual connection, we gotta have a mental connection with God. That is why we have to emphasize on the mental.
I like that. So now, there is somebody is listening to us and is thinking to themselves, how do I become practical within my church? How do we put it into motion? Because I think we're so used to systems, we're so used to processes. And so sometimes thinking outside the box becomes a bit difficult. And so somebody says, throw away the box. And somebody says, the box is not even there. You are just used to thinking that way. How do we practicalize this? Because you work with this, you implement such things, but you are implementing them from a social point of view. Any tips that you want to share with us as to how do we begin to put it into place and we see it moving forward?
Within the sphere of the church, right?
Yes, within the sphere of the church.
So the one thing that I would say is the church is not going to move together as a whole at the same time. That's not going to happen. We need trailblazers.
All
When
right.
you say that, who's going to be a pathfinder? See, the good thing about the Adventist faith is we already have these things called pathfinders and whatevers. But what exactly do we mean by saying pathfinders? We mean there was no path, so we need to find a path. If you're a trailblazer, it means you're coming in where there was no program in place, and you are the one influencing people to come up with a program. Conversations like we are having right now. That's good of you. You've already started a conversation. Now, let that conversation not end between you and me and whoever is going to be listening on radio. Go back to your family inside your home and say, we as a family, we are going to be very conscientious about talking about our mental health and anything related to that. We are talking also addiction related issues here. We're going to be open. We're going to discuss this thing. We're going to destigmatize talk around those issues. We're going to make them normal.
Yeah.
You agree on that? You start talking.
Yeah.
You partner with another person who is like-minded within your church environment.
Yeah.
Come up with lessons in church.
Yes.
We have Sabbath school in our church.
Yeah.
Oh, Mr. Truma, we need you to do Sabbath school for us on such and such a date. Okay,
yeah.
That's good. My Sabbath school is going to be touching on mental health.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then you teach the church what you provoke the church to talk about things you deem important.
Yes.
Because guess what? While you are talking during Sabbath school, somebody will come to you after divine service before you go for the afternoon service and say, do you think you can broaden this subject into something we can discuss as an entire church during the afternoon study? Then yes.
Yeah.
You've already started something. Before you know it, people are becoming more and more open towards the topics that you are concerned about.
Yeah.
And the whole church, before you know it, is beginning to talk about mental health. Begin
Yeah.
to talk about addiction-related issues.
And let's talk about resourcing. I just want us to look at, and I want us to talk about the resourcing, because I know you are an avid follower of one of the churches in Zimbabwe that has got a platform that looks at socio-economic issues. And this church has taken it upon itself to equip and resource itself to share this information on Facebook, on YouTube, on whatever platform. And I think everyone and anyone can actually come up with the resource toward the plan that they have in response to the crisis that's within their community.
Yes, and let me just say something. That church that you're talking about, you may not want to mention his name. I'll mention it's Mandara, okay? So
yeah.
Mandara, there is no topic that is
taboo
off the table.
Yeah.
There is no topic that is taboo.
Yeah.
They discuss every kind of topic. They find specialists for every topic, right?
Yeah.
It's not talk of funding. Funding will come once you present a program. I'm pretty sure they presented a proposal for a program to whoever, and that person or that organization decided to fund their projects. But come up with a program first.
Yes.
Blueprint of a program, then present it the way you want to present it to the outside world. Mandara is reaching us here in the US today.
Yes.
Mandara is reaching people in Australia, in the UK, in Canada, everywhere, all over Africa. This is how we need to be as local churches. We should go beyond the local. Why?
Yes.
Because somebody who is outside of your local parameters, your local geography, will say, I like what you're doing.
Yeah.
But I think you could expand it this way.
Yeah.
And you're like, we cannot expand it that way because we don't have the resources. Then the resources will come.
Yeah. But I like that thinking.
Aim high. Don't aim low. Aim high when you're doing whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
And then the resources will come.
Can I also say this? With resources, we need accountability and responsibility.
Correct.
When we began, you spoke about the fact that you are a coordinator within your organization.
Correct.
That means that there's a point where the buck stops. Somebody needs to be accountable and responsible. So crisis management, crisis strategy says there should be somebody who is accountable for each and everything that happens within our plan.
So, what I'm asking everyone to be is the brains behind the beginning of everything we want to do at whatever level, whether it's be within the home. If your child in the house is the one with the brains to come up with the discussion of the subject at the table, you as the father, the buck stops with you.
Yep.
But the child is the one that came up with this idea.
Yeah.
Do not be afraid to come up with an idea just because the buck does not stop with you.
Okay.
Come up with the idea. Let those who are responsible for saying the program goes or the program dies, let them be who they want to be, but you have to start the program. Be
Yeah.
accountable at whatever level you are at.
Yeah.
Whether you are the child or the parent or the maid in that household, just do your part. Your
Yeah.
little part can go a long way
Yeah.
in influencing others to actually buy into what you are selling. What we
Yeah.
just need to build is buy in, and then let
Yeah.
others buy into our suggestions, and then we move along that way. I'm
What
trying
I
to say,
find,
be
yeah.
responsible for the little thing, for the little that you can be.
Yeah.
The little that you can be will actually grow into something once it grows proper legs.
Yeah. And I think what I was just to add on to what you're saying, I think the one thing that we should also be cognizant of is the fact that we also need people who are skilled and qualified besides the calling, people who have got the capacity to manage, to coordinate this plan and this strategy. The mere fact that you're an elder does not qualify you in certain instances to manage a certain thing. For instance, I'll give just a basic example. Being an elder does not give you the skill to say, I can stand behind a 4K camera and operate it, or I
Very
can
true.
write a script about a conversation that will be spoken about. I might have the
Very
spiritual oversight, but what I need is we need people who have got the skill to do this thing. And I think for me, that is important as we're about to wrap it up.
Yeah, that's very true. And half the time you realize that you sell an idea to the wrong people who
Yeah.
will be places of authority. They will shoot it down because
Yeah.
they don't understand it.
Yeah.
Or they just don't have an inclination towards believing what you believe in as far
Yeah.
as these issues are concerned. Guess what? The church is not made up of an elder
Yes.
or a deacon or a pastor. The church is made up of various individuals from various backgrounds. That's why I
Yes.
say influence as many as you can
Yeah.
if you want influence change within a church. Because
Yeah.
if you try and influence an elder, they may not see reason for the cause that you are burning for.
Yeah.
That's why I'm saying start at Sabbath school level.
Yes.
Discuss it, because no one can stop or kill a discussion.
Yeah.
But a discussion can actually educate an elder who doesn't understand what they're doing in whatever position. And then when the church realizes that the elder or whoever is supposed to be making decisions cannot make these decisions because they are not educated enough in the subject, the church has the mandate to bring in some other people from outside who will help
Yeah.
with the subject. And
Mm.
then you will go ahead, you will forge ahead.
Yeah.
And also don't be afraid to take people out of your way if they're not trying to go where you're trying to go to. I know in saying this, some elders will frown upon this, but
Yeah.
yeah, if an elder is not up to the task, sideline the elder, put somebody in place who is understanding what we are facing at this particular point in time of our existence.
And as we close it, Mudari, the one thing that I just love about your job is that as much as you face challenges on a daily basis, you see the success stories coming out of the planning that you guys do.
Yes.
And I think it gives satisfaction when you see your response to a crisis and you see yourselves as a team working together and things falling into place. I think there's joy when you see your plan come together.
There is personal joy, right? Every success story is it gives me joy. But then there's another aspect of it. Every success story also, for this organization to actually have this unit in place, it means there's some people who make decisions somewhere that say we require this unit to be there. For us, it's the commissioners. We have commissioners who make decisions whether or not we have to disband the unit or the unit has to carry forward. So far, the data we have given them and what they see has caused them to keep voting for the funding of my position and the position of those that I work with, because they are seeing that it's a need. And we are actually coming in to help meet that need as a unit, right? The same applies to our church organization, our church structure, our church programs. Once the people realize that there is a need, they will action on it. So we need to look at the need first, action on the need, work toward helping whatever we are helping, and then look at the results. When you start seeing the results, trust me, the church will be like, we should have done this a little sooner.
A long time.
Individuals who want to jump on the bandwagon of those people who are actually helping, because everybody wants to be associated with a success story.
That's a story, yeah.
So yes, you can start small. Those small stories of success will bring in more people to your side to help, and then more need will be exposed. And then before you know it, it's a growing movement.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, the question that I have for us this morning is that there is Nyaope at your doorstep. There is tick at your doorstep. There's cocaine at your doorstep. There is vuzu parties. There is all sorts of vices that are happening in and around our communities. What has been the response of your local church? Do we have a plan? Do you have a plan as a church? And I guess from the conversation that I've been having with Mr. Mudari, it can be done. It can be done. God set us up as a church really to make a difference in our communities. There's a serious crisis in our churches, and are we up to it? That's the question that I leave you with this morning. And I just want to say thank you very much, Henry, for coming through to the Adventist World Radio and sharing your knowledge and insights with us.
Thank you for having me.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.